this crazy situation that they are dilettanting in philosophy with misunderstood theological propositions which they don't take serious anymore, which they take merely as symbols, that means merely as kinds of sophistic arguments in a discussion, and that in addition to that they hope really that they can clarify the human mind by cooking up that witch's brew. That is something unbelievable, but it is done by philosophers in our time, unwillingly, or better, with the best of will. So that one finally must almost say, when one looks around in our time, God protect us from the men of good will. We might be able to cope with the men of ill will. At least we know them, and we know what they are doing, but the men of good will certainly do not know what they are doing anymore in our time. So mixture of disciplines makes already for that dim, nebulous atmosphere where every concept, clear concept, can be as well something else and can mean even a third thing. And what is here, because this is an individual business, what comes here about is a drug that gives the best, I must agree, yet the most efficient drug for educated people and for people of good spiritual will, for people like us, the most dangerous and most effective drug to help us not face the situation of our time but escape it by engaging indeed in the most seducing and glorious kind of daydreaming that can be thought of, namely daydreaming in that vague atmosphere into which can flow all the great ideas of men at all ages, musical, logical, everything in a concoction. But this drug is a more lethal drug than morphine. A morphinist might get 80 years old and be able still to do something, but this kind of a daydreamer will never arrive back in reality at all. And he will see how this, what is called philosophy, namely daydreaming with the mixed up ideas of others, without ever facing reality and trying to apply ideas to reality, to apply it to a kind of inner hereafter in which one lives already, in order to feel fine, in order to be satisfied, and one is not satisfied because the katzenjammer the next week grows more and the drug has to be taken in more intensely, and that's how it's going on till the mind cracks up. So it is not only so that, as we have seen very primitively and in the masses, the strange event that getting more leisure time, they spend the leisure time, which will soon in the future be more than the working time, that they spend this leisure time, the kind of drug taking, television, whatever kind of entertainment, or looking at things instead of doing things, which is also escape. Here we have the highest form of the same phenomenon, namely the intellectual having, or the real gifted man of good spiritual will, is misled into another area of now especially high fiction, but also only a fictional world, where he can engage in his daydreaming without anything ever coming out of it, and he is as sure ruined by it. This his world is a nebulous world that can never have any indication with reality because it's entirely severed from the relation to reality. It is taken for this very reason, in order to blot out this seemingly so dark world of our reality and not have to face it. One gets this kaleidoscopic change of empty yet brilliant ideas that ever turned up in the mind of man, and one does it as a mere consumer. Here again we have the modern consumer personality who tries to consume everything and not to produce anything, except forced to do so in order to earn money by it, in order to consume more and to consume better. The end is always this consummation of things, consumption in any sense. Here in the spiritual sense, emptying the mind, poisoning the mind, and finally destroying the mind of man. We have seen how big parts of modern art serve just this purpose. If you take a kind of painting that started very promising, one specific direction of it, surrealism, it tried to make use of the new insights of psychoanalysis and psychology into certain features of myths. It tried, by giving up, showing us those broken things, to portray our broken world in which everything is possible, namely every kind of association. It tried to shock us. By doing that, it ruined itself at art, as art. What came out of it finally, what they could only do, was to paint strange objects, shocking strange objects, exactly in the manner of any academic painter. That means there was no painterly value in the thing at all, except a few techniques of Mr. Dali that makes the surface shining, but Leonardo could do that better, and Greco. That he rediscovered, that's all a technical thing. A result of craftsmanship, but no real artistic value. There have been good people among them, and they ruined themselves as painters because they wanted again to mix up, namely do with painting something, mixing up painting and psychology, painting and philosophy, trying to make statements, and even shocking statements, of intellectual content to a beholder who just wants to see a picture and wants to experience something by participating in an experience in the picture as a work of art. They write a leader, like a journalist, and paint that leader in the newspaper to him with many witty remarks, and one can study them. Again, we have a point where things get mixed up, performances get mixed up, and we have already, again, one element of daydreaming. Just look around who has those pictures and loves them, especially the people who want to sit before them and enter a process of associations. They like to associate in their mind, namely jumping from one meaning to the other. What the patient has to do when he is on the couch of the psychoanalyst. Exactly the same thing they are doing voluntarily, and just for fun, as a kind of a mental game, not knowing how dangerous that mental game is. How dangerous it is to associate freely and without any responsibility, because it washes out the mind. The meanings that have value and stick are washed out by this permanent changing of meanings, and it becomes all one colorful vague stream of permanent, flux of self-consciousness, how it is called, this exciting experience which we better can have if we take morphine. I guarantee it is more colorful. Morphion does better than we do with our free association. It really makes them run. And one can see something. So if one wants that, why not take the full step? It is anyhow, because the full step seems too risky. But in that case, I would rather recommend to take the risk, if one needs that, than to do it that way, which is even more destructive. Now, mixing up is a very funny phenomenon. Namely, if we know, which we have to in order to give ourselves more foundations for what nihilism really does and can possibly mean, if we go back now to the original creative form of the human mind, namely the mythical mind, then we find something that at the first view looks exactly like that procedure. And if we listen to our psychologists, and I don't mean the psychoanalysts of that caliber I was talking about, of those I won't even talk, but the psychologist whose business it is, or let's say in Mr. Jung, in Dr. Jung, where we can really make the dividing line right through his body, splitting him in two. Namely, on the one hand, the masterful scientist who did most in order to make us recognize or re-recognize that if certain figures, appearances appear in the dream of a human individual that is mentally sick or disturbed, she calls archetypes, certain specific features which we all meet in our experience anyhow, it's a child's play to find them out, one doesn't need a psychologist for that, and they are so few and they are so banal that for philosophy they do not really count at all. But this great discovery that in certain stages of insanity, when they get grave or when the patient is really sick, it can be recognized by the turning up of those symbols in his dreams, then the doctor knows I have a serious case before me. This great and very useful discovery that every doctor just has to know and has to experiment with is accompanied in the same person by a theory of archetypes which claims to open up for us the understanding of myth, boiling this whole wonderful, mysterious, fantastic world of men's mythical productions and creations down to a few banal archetypes that everybody experiences fathers, everybody has trouble with mother, everybody has early sex experiences, for heaven's sake, and blood indeed plays a great role in everybody's life because he loses it constantly, so what? Boiling the meaning of myth down to a structure of such symbols, so to speak, is indeed an anti-philosophic and anti-reasonable procedure that empties the meaning of one of the greatest creative experiences of the human mind, namely the mystical world. And then to claim that one knows and has the knowledge of this world and can make it available to modern men, promising modern men that he can go back to the mystical world, oh no, he can only fall into those empty pseudo-mythical dreams and associations, symbolistic associations we have talked about. There is no way back to the mystical mind. There's only one other and positive possibility, and that is the true philosopher's work to find out what were the ideals, what is the specific greatness, creative greatness of all musical ideas, and they will then turn out all to be very different and very colorful, so we may learn from them and regain this great capability which people who came just out of the myth still have, like Plato, namely to use myths, to invent myths, but under the control of the logical mind at that time, and now more generally speaking, under the control of reason and common sense, using, gaining back the color of myths and the color of imagination that people then had and which we have lost in the time of the mythical, of the logical mind. That is indeed a worthwhile purpose, but it can be done only by reason and by first seeing and understanding the wrong, poisonous and lethal uses that also can be made of mythical elements that are streaming in from all sides in our time permanently. So at first, if we look back at myths from the scientific experiences we had with myths and from our experiences with myths in our dreams, where permanently associations float into each other and mingle and mix, we get the impression, the first impression, that the mythical mind is indeed an entirely unorganized mind, that it lacks organization. This first, the first technical impression of it. Then we find that ever so often, for instance in pre-Columbian mythical culture, but also in early Indian and almost everywhere, not only the priests, in order to get their new visions within that mythical framework, use drugs, but that whole parts of the people, Mexico for instance, were used to use drugs in the ceremonials, in the very rituals. We find then that in dances in Bali and many other places, in order to make the ritual performance, which is a magical performance, which has to be perfect, absolutely perfect. If I perform a rain dance, that means that I become unified and identified as a dancer with the rain god, or even naturally speaking with the rain. I do not only imitate the movements of the rain in its acceleration when it starts and goes on, I am initiating it, because by going through those movements the rain joins in. He is forced to join in because I got the rhythm of the rain, so to speak, and so it must rain. This identification in a magical performance, in a ritual dance. And is sometimes brought about in order to make it perfect, because it ever so often doesn't work. And then the medicine man, as every priest says, of course, well, I mean, that is because Schulze in that rank didn't dance rightly. or David had a feather on his head, and he's a faker, because that's not a real eagle feather. He didn't have one. He just copied one. He painted it. That's a wrong feather. Something went wrong in this performance. It is so necessary for the magical and mythical mind that everything is perfect in this performance. Absolutely perfect. Because this is reality. It is not a dance as we look at it. It is not an artistic experience. It is joining the rain. And that is why it for us has such a highly symbolistic value and such a high artistic value, because we see the rain, we feel the rain, and we get it as a kind of artistic experience. It is indeed a high artistic experience. But we do not sit there and wait that it rains now. And that is what the mythical man looks for. Now, in order to do that perfectly, we find then in Bali and other places, in Bali especially, young girls beautifully trained for dance are hypnotized. in hypnosis, they can be told and can be made to feel that they are Krauss. They are Krauss now, the holy Krauss which shall be conjured by this dance. And they indeed, it was to be seen in the movie some many years ago, we can even look at it now without going to Bali, they indeed have an absolute performance. Nothing can go wrong. They are those Krauss. So we find in musical performances, in order to bring about the technique of the musical mind, which is magic, drugs have been frequently used, hypnosis has been used. That means all those features which come in now on us and which make in a way for the insanity and fictionality of modern life. And we find here, in the procedures we looked at, we found permanent mixing up of different fields till associations run free and blot out any meaning, leaving only emotional values, which are destructive emotional values to boot. And when we so, from that point, vantage point, look back at myths, we suspect first that the human mind in its so-called first status, namely the mythical, magical mind, went, from our point of view, to a plain period of fictionality and insanity. And we say, oh, thanks God that the Hebrews and the Greeks got rid of that status of mind, then people became sane. And that is exactly how the great fighters against the mystical mind, the first ones, felt about it and thought about it. If you read under that point of view Heraclitus' sayings, who was the first philosopher who put the principle of the logos per se into the middle of the human mind, then you will find that with an unspeakable disgust he speaks of all the revelations of the mystical mind. For him this is dirt, senseless associations, senseless mixing up of experiences. There is nothing but an individual world in which people cannot even communicate with each other, let alone commune, and where there no real creative life is possible. This hatred of myth, this misconception of myth, which we get when we look from our modern knowing scientific experiences back at it, where we find all the features the great thinkers of the logical mind had, all of them, till the 19th century, when suddenly they started to say perhaps there is more to myth than we ever thought. But then when they went into that business, then they became symbolists and they made just the wrong use of myth. It became superstitious. It went to this kind of existential religious thinking where one really believes now to have a principle that is higher than reason. Well, faith for the philosopher was only for the religious believer something higher than reason. For the reasonable human mind, faith has always been something different from reason, no more. But to take faith and they do not even say faith, they say intuition, association, meaning of meaning, changing of meaning, all those new magical tricks. To maintain then that they are higher than reason is a pitfall and a crime. How is it possible at all? Because the logical mind has made in its development of the mother of it all, namely reason, has made the mere logos of our today logicality, abstract logos, and the ratio. And of course, it can be said that intuition, because intuition plays a great and wonderful role in art, that intuition is at least something more valuable than this kind of ratio. But by trying to put ratio and logicality in its place, namely where it belongs only in natural science, they throw out the babe with the bath, and they throw out reason, and they spit at reason, not knowing that without reason there would not have been myths, and that without reason there would not be art, and that without reason there would not have been a logical mind. That reason is the creative capability that brings them all forth. So they really cut off the branch on which they sit. It is a grotesque and sad show to watch that. All because we do not even know anymore what we mean by the different words. They are also mixed up. They are not conceptions anymore. They are just, and we approach them as a meaning of meaning of meaning of meaning of meaning in an endless relativity which will never yield any clarity about what they originally meant. And if we do not mean that by them anymore, what we now mean by them, and what they possibly in the future could mean if we want them to mean that. We are not even able to handle words as means of definite conceptions that we can give account for and say we mean that by it, because of this association, free-floating association process, which seems so wonderful and so artistic, but as we have seen in the case of surrealistic painting, is not even artistic, let alone it being anything else. So this judgment of the early logical philosophers like Heraclitus is understandable. It is understandable. They had to fight a state of mind, or the Hebrew prophets. It was very, very hard to convince anybody of Jehovah, because the mystical deities were so much more impressive and so much more rich. They had a hard time to force the human mind to take that decisive turn to logical procedures in religion as well as in philosophy, and it's quite understandable that they underrated their enemy and that they killed more than they should have killed when they made that turn. That's human. But we, looking back from our experience, that we join them and think now, what is even worse, that the mystical mind has been like ours, which is a plain insult for the mystical mind. That is a funny occasion. So we have to see, was the mystical mind really such a kaleidoscopic mind as our symbolistic mind is? This is only symbolistic mind comes by the joint decay of the logical and the mythical mind, and both broken up deliver the material both for those permanently changing kaleidoscopic views which chase us from one impression to the other all around in a very, very colorful nothingness. This nothingness has color, and seducing color. So we see now that if that is the status, then we can already understand a little better why modern nihilism, which we have seen to be the essence of all the ghosts that turn up, is so especially seducing. It is so especially seducing because it is so colorful. It is much more colorful, this nothingness and speculation about nothingness, if one really goes along with it, than all the cheap propositions, starting with Congress, down to those philosophers who still tell us, human reason, this wonderful, bright thing in relation to the gospel. We heard all that. We don't even listen anymore. And here turns up a colorful world that, like a kaleidoscope, changes permanently and is a real joy for the second childishness of man, senility.